Don't look back, let's go. Set the pace, watch me steal the show. Higher ground, yeah, I'm rising fast. This is my moment, it's built to last. Keep the focus, keep the drive.
Hello everyone, welcome to the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant Show. I am your host, Rebecca Whitman, helping you go from burned out and overwhelmed to balanced, beautiful, and abundant. We're so glad you're listening to our show, and we have a very, very special guest today. Welcome to the show, Michael Hingson.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
It is so amazing that you're on this show because I heard about your story, what happened to you during 9/11 when the World Trade Center was bombed, and I read about that your lab walked you down the stairs to safety. And I was so blown away by your story that I told several people, including my husband. And now you are on my show. I met you at an event. I didn't really go into your story because I kind of like the newness of like hearing it for the first time on my show. And I'm just like, oh my God, I totally know this person from the news and from the triumph that you were able to experience during 9/11. So I am just so excited that you're here. I feel like it's a huge manifestation and I can't wait to go deeper into your story. So let me tell my audience a little bit about your amazing background. Michael and his guide dog, Roselle, escaped the 78th floor of Tower 1 during the bombing of the World Trade Center. He has written a number one bestseller called Thunder Dog, and he has a second book called Running with Roselle, A Story for Our Youth. He is an international keynote speaker. He has spoken for anyone from George Bush to the Larry King Show. He is just so well known for his just positive attitude, mindset work, and I can't wait to get into it. So, Michael, tell us your story. What were you experiencing? What was happening that day? How did you wake up on 9/11? And what transpired to get you from the 78th floor to safely to the ground?
Well, and if I could start this way, there's also a third book called Live Like a Guide Dog, True Stories from a Blind Man and His Dogs About Being Brave, Overcoming Adversity, and Moving Forward in Faith that was published last August. And that book is all about helping people learn to control fear. And we can talk more about that later if you'd like.
Yeah, let's talk about it later.
But on September 11th, it started out like any normal, well, it mostly started out like any normal day. At 12:30 that morning, a thunderstorm came over our house. It came right over the house. Roselle was afraid of thunder, so we went down to my office in the basement, and I turned the stereo on and turned the volume up, but God has a sense of humor. The storm literally came right over our house, so it sounded like bombs were going off outside. I'd never heard thunder quite so loud, and if it was a message to tell me not to go into the World Trade Center that day, I guess I didn't pick up on that, because it eventually went away. Anyway, at 2 o'clock, we went back to bed and got up at 5 and got ready and then went on into the city. And it was a normal autumn day in New York. And so we got to the World Trade Center and I got to my office about 20 to 8, just in time to meet somebody who was bringing breakfast that we ordered for our early arrivals. And I showed him where to set up while I went in and got my laptop projector and set all that up so that we could do presentations, because we were going to be training some people as to how to sell our products. Some of our reseller partners was something that was set up by our distributor partner that worked with a lot of smaller resellers, our distributor partner, Ingram Micro. Anyway, at 8, David Frank, a colleague of mine from our corporate office who was responsible for pricing models, and who said that he wanted to come and be part of the seminar to talk about pricing. David came in, and some people from Ingram Micro, our distributor, were with him. And so we finished setting up the laptop projector. I can set it up, but he's a better aimer than I am. So anyway, we got it set up, and the other people were eating. The last thing David and I needed to do before we started the seminars was to send a list on letterhead of all the attendees that morning so that the Port Authority security people would have an actual list on letterhead that they could refer to when somebody came up and said, hey, I'm supposed to go to the 78th floor to Quantum. They could check the name and compare it with ID, and then they could give people badges and let them up. So at 8:45, I was literally reaching for stationery to put in the printer to print the list when we heard kind of a muffled explosion. It wasn't loud. The building sort of shuddered. And then as I'm tipping my hand toward the camera, that's what the building did. It tipped. Tall buildings like that are flexible. They're made to actually flex in the wind. And if an airplane hits them, like one hit the Empire State Building during the 1940s. And so Roselle was asleep under my desk. I moved over to the doorway. And it really makes a lot of sense. You know, you're on the 78th floor. If the building falls over, being in the doorway isn't going to matter. But I grew up in California in earthquake country, so I learned early, building moves, habit, go stand in doorway. David was holding on to my desk. And we tipped so far that David and I actually said goodbye to each other because we thought we were about to take a 78th floor plunge to the street. But the issue is that several things happened. We said goodbye, but the building slowed down and it stopped, and then it started coming back the other way and got vertical again. And immediately I moved back into my office and I met Roselle coming out from under my desk. I took her leash. I told her to heel, which meant to come around on my left side and sit. She did that, and about that time, the building dropped straight down about 6 feet. Because as we now know, the building was going back, the expansion joints were going back to their normal configuration. What you need to understand is that I spent a lot of time, once I started working in the World Trade Center as the Mid-Atlantic Region Sales Manager for Quantum Corporation, as the leader of the office, I spent time learning what to do in an emergency. I spent time learning all the emergency exit processes, emergency preparedness things, and so on. That's not what a guide dog does. People think, oh, the guide dog just let him out. No, the guide dog doesn't do that. It's not what they're supposed to do. The purpose of a guide dog is to make sure that we walk safely, not to know where to go and how to get there. So as I point out to people all the time, Roselle did not lead me out of the World Trade Center. In fact, part of the time I couldn't even use the harness because it was too crowded to have us walk side by side. So Roselle was actually behind me. The job is to make sure that we walk safely, and my job is to tell Roselle step by step where I want her to go and how to get there. So if I want her to go left, I use hand signals and I say left. If I want her to go right, right, forward, and so on. She gets to the bottom of a flight of stairs, she stops. Or she gets to the top of a flight of stairs, she stops. And then I have to determine what's going on, which in the stairwell was no big deal, and then give her commands like forward. But it's my job to know where to go and how to get there, which is why I spent a lot of time learning what to do in case of an emergency at the World Trade Center. What I didn't realize until many years later was that that actually created a mindset in me that said, if there's ever an emergency, you know what to do. And the mindset clicked in on September 11th. We didn't know what happened. Of course, people say to me all the time, well, of course you didn't know because you couldn't see it. Excuse me, the last time I checked, Superman and X-ray vision were fictitious and are fictitious. No one on my side of the building knew what happened. I was in the stairwell going down 78 floors with hundreds of people. No one knew what happened. Because the last time I checked, people can't see through a whole bunch of floors of concrete and steel and rebar and so on. We didn't know. We figured out after about four floors once I got into the to the stairwell that an airplane probably hit the building because I was smelling an odor, and I finally realized I'm smelling the fumes from burning jet fuel. I smell it all the time at airports. Well, when I observed that to other people, they said, yeah, that's what it is. We were trying to figure it out. We must have been hit by an airplane, but we didn't know the details and we didn't know why. So we figured and assumed an airplane hit, but we didn't know what kind, how big, deliberate, or whatever. We just figured that was the case. We all worked together to make sure we didn't have panic on the stairs going down. There were several times that some people almost lost it. Before we left our offices to go to the stairwell, I asked David to get our guests to the stairs. I said, don't let them take elevators, because if they take elevators, and David saw fire outside our window and above us, and he said there are millions of pieces of paper falling outside our windows. And so since there was fire, I pointed out to David, don't let our guests take the elevators. because if the fire gets into the elevator shafts, which it did, then anybody in the elevator cars could perish. That's something that I knew, again, because I knew that the elevators ran in the central core of the World Trade Center, and clearly some of the elevators did get fuel droplets that ignited and so on, and people were burned.
So when you're going down the stairs with Roselle, are you, because you're blind, are you feeling people in front of and behind you? Or are you trying to get around them because your survival instinct is, I got to get down fast? Like, what was it like as far as the pacing and the speed of getting down? Was it like a gridlock situation, or were you able to like maneuver your way in between people with guiding your dog behind you?
Kind of neither. You know, when we were going down the stairs, we kept people from panicking. We didn't rush. Nobody rushed. We walked at a good clip down the stairs, but I didn't try to go around people. And they mostly didn't try to go around me. A couple people were in a big hurry, but mostly that didn't happen because we knew instinctively that if we didn't work together, if we didn't keep panic from occurring on the stairs, too many people would be trampled. So, again, we didn't know what was going on. We didn't know that that a terrorist attack had occurred with an airplane full of 26,000 pounds of jet fuel that had exploded as it hit the building. So I think that was something that did help us, but we mostly didn't really do any panicking that would cause people to rush and just run over people. And we knew that we needed to do that. There were several of us on the stairs who at one time or another worked to keep people from panicking. At one point, David panicked. He said, Mike, we're going to die. We're not going to make it out of here. And I just said, stop it, David. If Roselle and I can go down these stairs, so can you. And what he then did, what I thought was really great, and I talk about it when I give speeches and talk at keynote addresses and so on about the World Trade Center. David said, after I yelled at him, and I did that very deliberately, he said, I'm going to walk a floor below you and tell you what I see because I got to get my mind off what's going on. And I said, that's fine. So like when we got to the 45th floor, David was at the 44th floor and he said, hey, Mike, I'm at the 44th floor. This is where the cafeteria is, not stopping, going on down the stairs. And the reason I talk about that is that what
was he yelling that to you up the stairs?
Let me finish. He was shouting to me from a floor below.
Wow.
But the point of what David did was he became a focal point for anyone who could hear him. So for maybe hundreds or thousands of people above and below him, suddenly they heard things like, hey, Mike, I'm at the 43rd floor. All's good here. He gave everyone something to focus on. That had to help keep people from panicking because they heard someone who sounded like they were okay and were saying that they were okay, and they were going down the stairs. So he gave everyone something to focus on that said, I'm okay. And that had to keep a lot of panic from occurring on the stairs.
Did everyone from your office survive and the guests of your office?
Oh, yeah. All the people from my office who would normally be in were not there. They were out working, supporting their manager, you know, who wanted them to be out selling and fixing products and so on. But the other people who were in our office got out. Most all of the people who perished were above where the planes hit because then they couldn't get out. So very few people below, and some were in that situation, but very few people below where the planes hit didn't make it out. Most everyone did. So our guests made it out because we were all out of the office by 5 minutes after the plane hit and going down the stairs. And the people who were in our office actually saw us as we went by or as we were on the second level going out of the whole center part of the system to outside. They saw us. They were already down the stairs because we had started them down before we left.
What a story. We are going to cut to a quick commercial break. I'm Rebecca Whitman. I am interviewing Michael Hingson. Him and his dog, Roselle, survived from the 78th floor of the World Trade Center. He's an international keynote speaker. And we are going to talk about what he learned from his guide dog after this quick commercial break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
How clean is the water you're drinking and bathing in? If you call Aquasana Water today, they'll provide you with a free assessment telling you the condition of your tap water. Aquasana sells whole house water filters starting at $1,000. Isn't that worth it to have a 10-year supply of filtered, cleaner water? Aquasana water filters tackle chlorine taste and odor and can reduce contaminants like viruses, lead, forever chemicals, and microplastics, depending on the system you purchased. So make the free call, find out the condition of your water, and make your water cleaner the Aquasana way. It's a smart decision for you and your family and a must for a healthy home. Get a whole house Aquasana water system starting at $1,000 for your entire home. Call and find out the condition of your water with a free water assessment. 800-925-6029. 800-925-6029. 800-925-6029. That's 800-925-6029.
Everything is expensive right now. Gas, food, you name it. You're spending more, you are making the same or less money. So, what do? You rack up credit card debt, that's what you do. It's not your fault. It's the economy. And guess what? If you rack up too much credit card debt like some of us, you can't pay your bills. Then the credit card companies, as nice as they are, start hounding you for money. Then you start your downward spiral. A smart thing for you to do is to call the Zero Debt. They can help you consolidate all your credit card bills into one affordable payment. Millions of people have done it. It works to make you debt-free. Make this free call right now. It costs you nothing to learn more.
800-628-5675. 800-628-5675. 800-628-5675. That's 800-628-5675.
Hey there, gorgeous. Quick question. Do you want to look younger, feel stronger, and glow like the star that you are? Of course you do, honey. So here's the deal. Your body wants to age gracefully, but stress, sugar, and time are not on your side. Enter the game changer you didn't know you needed, liquid collagen. This isn't your average powdery chalky mess. Oh no, honey, this is next level science. Our liquid collagen has a 93% bioavailability rate. Powdered collagen is 30% at best. This means your hair, skin, nails, joints get the VIP treatment. If you want to reduce wrinkles, feel amazing in your body, and turn heads, this is your glow up in a bottle. Don't wait. Your future self is literally begging for this. Click the link in the show notes to grab your bottle today. But hurry, supplies are limited and this kind of fabulous will not last forever. You deserve this. Now go shine like the balanced, beautiful, and abundant star that you are. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I'm Rebecca Whitman, your host of the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant Show. I am interviewing best-selling author, international keynote speaker, Michael Hingson, who survived the World Trade Center bombing with the help of his guide dog, Roselle. So we are going to talk about what we can learn from Labradors. So you have a third book, and it's called Guide Dog Wisdom. Is that correct? No,
Live Like a Guide Dog.
Live Like a Guide Dog.
Guide Dog Wisdom is a section in Thunder Dog, but Live Like a Guide Dog is the new book.
Okay, Live Like a Guide Dog. You can draw from both, Live Like a Guide Dog or Guide Dog Wisdom. What are some lessons that we humans can garner from Labradors and Guide Dogs?
I realized at the beginning of 2020 when the pandemic hit that I had spent the last 19 years talking about teamwork and trust and escaping from the World Trade Center. And I was as afraid as anyone else, but I had learned how to deal with that and control that fear, which is the mindset that I talked about earlier. And I realized that I had never taught anyone how to learn to control fear, because the reality is we're so programmed that, oh, something horrible happens around us, we get afraid. We don't learn that we can actually learn to control that fear and use it as a powerful tool to help us focus. which is what I did on September 11th. So Live Like a Guide Dog is all about helping people learn to control fear. And it, like Thunder Dog, is available anywhere books are sold. You can get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. It's available on audio from Audible and all that sort of stuff. Both of them are. And by the way, we didn't mention it. You mentioned Larry King earlier. He wrote the foreword to Thunder Dog, which was a great blessing.
That's great.
But the books are both available, as well as Running with Roselle. And the fact of the matter is that we can learn to focus and control fear. Dogs don't deal with what if. They don't focus on everything that goes on around them and think to themselves, well, if this happens, what am I going to do? If that happens, what am I going to do? They focus on what they can control, which is a lesson that we all can learn. Focus on what you can control. Don't worry about the rest, because it's not going to do you any good, and it's going to drive you crazy, because there's nothing you can do about it anyway. And so the fact of the matter is, if we would learn to stop doing what if about every single little old thing and focus on the things over which we do have control, then that would be a lot better. So, for example, what do I do if there's an emergency in the building where I am? Do I know how to get out? Have I thought about that? Have I thought about the options? That's one thing that we do have control over. We don't have control, probably, over is somebody going to hit the building with an airplane or a car crash into a building or whatever. But we can control our part of our lives, and that's what we should do. We didn't have any control over the World Trade Center events happening. And I haven't seen anyone yet who can convince me that we could have really, if we put it all together, figure it out. And so the bottom line is, I am of the opinion that there was no way that we were going to be able to predict and deal with the fact that the events of September 11 happened. But we all have absolute control over how we deal with addressing the issues of September 11th in our own lives. That we do have control over. So the fact is, dogs don't do what if. We do all the time, which is too bad. Dogs are not animals that trust actually immediately. I think dogs do love unconditionally, but they don't trust unconditionally. But what dogs do is be more open to trust. And so they want to establish relationships with people, and they want people to be pack leaders. Our job is to initiate that trust and to also convey that we want to trust them as well. We can be more open to trust than we are. And if we do that, we're, again, going to become less fearful if we're open to it. That doesn't mean that we're necessarily going to end up trusting people. There are people who have hidden agendas, but if you just assume everybody's got a hidden agenda so you're going to trust no one, that doesn't help, and that's not very productive. Yeah. If at the same time what you do is you look at working with people, you know, if somebody wants to trust you, you'll be able to tell that. And if you want to trust them, they should be able to tell that. If the trust can't be developed because one person in the relationship doesn't trust, then you have to deal with that and move on. But be open to trust. In our world today, we hardly are open to trust. And as I said, dogs are much more open to trust than we are.
Those are great lessons. I feel like humans, once they get hurt or betrayed, then they just decide that they're never going to trust again. Whereas dogs are more in the moment. They just, even if somebody, you know, verbally or physically abused a dog, they're still, it might take them a little longer to trust a human because they remember that abuse, but they are ultimately, they forgive easily and they stay in the moment.
One of the dogs that we adopted once we moved back to California in 2003, we adopted, was a golden retriever named Panama. She had been a career change guide dog. She never actually ended up being a guide dog, but she was trained. She was a very strong-willed golden retriever. We got her when she was 12, and she had been abused. Mm. And so the school said she's deaf, she doesn't pay attention. Well, we discovered that she wasn't totally deaf, but it took a while to develop and get developed a trusting relationship with her. But once that happened, she was a wonderful addition to the family. And we spent a lot of time working with her and saying, we want to trust you and we want you to trust us, essentially. And that eventually did happen. So we had her, which was a lot of fun. And she eventually played with the other dogs in our house, which was great. But you're right. When they're abused, it is something they remember. But it would take an incredible amount of negativity to get a dog to the point where they won't trust at all. And I have never heard of a dog that is so negatively impacted that you can't break through barriers. With people, you're right. Something happens with one person and suddenly nobody's good anymore. And that's just not true.
That is a great point. Now, I'm obsessed with labs. I know you've probably had a lot of them. One of the most painful things that I've gone through as a human who's obsessed with labs is letting them go and saying goodbye and, you know, having to put them down if they're sick or whatever. So what are your tips, or is it just excruciatingly painful for you too? But I'm sure, especially with Roselle, having gone through so much trauma with a dog when she had to die, how did you deal with that pain?
Well, the issue is that I adopted a mindset a long, long time ago that dogs aren't going to live as long as I. Mm-hmm. And that every guide dog is a teammate. And in fact, I have to be the one to decide when the dog retires, because they'll work till they drop.
Yeah.
And they always want to work. And so I start to see signs like the dog doesn't see as well as it did. It goes slower at night. It doesn't walk as fast and so on. And so the result of all that is that it becomes evident that if I'm going to continue to do things at the pace I'm used to, it may be time to retire this dog. That doesn't mean we put the dog down, but the dog will retire. And if I can keep the dog, I will. And if I can't, for whatever reason, then we will help find it a home. Like Africa, my seventh guide dog went back to live with the people who raised her from a puppy for Guide Dogs for the Blind. And once she left and went back with them, walking out the door without a backward glance, thank you very much. but she lived another 2 years. But the fact is that I realize it is time for a dog to retire, and I have to be the one to make that decision and help the dog adjust. So the fact is that, yeah, it hurts, but by the same token, you have to do what's best for your partner, your friend, whether it's a dog who is a service dog, where you have a teaming relationship, or it's a family pet with which you should have a teaming relationship, but most people don't. And they don't step back and look at what's going on objectively to do what the best thing is for a dog. So the pain happens. But I got a great piece of advice from a vet once when my wife and I, Karen, got married back in 1982. In 1983, I think it was, maybe it was 84, but her cat that I married into the cat's family, what can I say? Bojangles had to be put down. She had cancer. And it hurt a lot for both of us because I had become quite attached. But the vet who helped us said, look, don't spend a lot of time without getting another cat. That doesn't mean that this cat's going to replace the memories that Bojangles gave you, but it will be different memories. But the longer you wait, the harder it will be. And what you need to do is to get a new cat and start making new memories. And at the same time, treasure the memories from the cat that you lost. And that's the same with a dog. The fact of the matter is, it's not being disrespectful to do that. And so whenever I have to retire or a guide dog has to be put down, then I also know that I can move on, and I'm doing the best thing for my partner, whatever that is. My second guide dog, Holland, worked 13 and a half years. And in fact, he was moving pretty slowly, and we did retire him. Well, he was about to retire. I was within 2 weeks of going and getting a new guide dog when Holland collapsed one day in the backyard. And we took him to the vet, and the vet said, I could probably bring him back, but he's not going to have a great quality of life. He was over 15, almost 15 and a half. He was a golden retriever. And the vet said, we really should probably just let him go. We confirmed it with Guide Dogs for the Blind, just on principle. and said goodbye to Holland. But I've got wonderful memories and have no regrets of him working so long and no regrets of helping him to cross the Rainbow Bridge and go elsewhere.
Do you believe that when you go to heaven, all your dogs will be waiting for you wagging their tail?
You bet. and waiting for food, you know, they're going to be there with a hand, with a nose out waiting for food, of course.
Oh, that's great. That's so great.
I hope there's a stash up there waiting for me so that I can get them. But, you know, we'll see.
Who's been your favorite dog out of all the dogs you've owned?
Oh, that's really hard because they're all different. You know, Roselle was certainly a very famous dog. And
didn't she get a medal? Like a wasn't she honored?
She was honored several times. She won the Dickin Award from England from PDSA, which is Pets Dispensary for Sick Animals. But they had a medal called the Dickin Medal, which was like the Congressional Medal of Honor for dogs, if you will. And they hadn't given out awards from, I think, basically 1949 until Roselle and Salty, another guide dog who was in the World Trade Center a few floors below where I was, and then a search and rescue dog all got awards in March of 2002. Roselle also was given an award from the American Kennel Club and was presented at the K9 Yukonuba AKC Championship, Dog Championship in Orlando in December of 2002. So she got several awards, but I can't really say one is my absolute favorite over any other dog because they're all different. They all have personalities, and each one stands out in their own way. My current guide dog, Alamo, is an extremely bright dog, and he ranks right up there with everyone I've had before him.
It's like a parent, right? You can't name your favorite kid.
You shouldn't, anyway.
Yeah. We are going to go to a quick commercial break. My name is Rebecca Whitman, your host of the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant Show. We're taking you from burned out and overwhelmed to balanced, beautiful, and abundant. We're going to be back with international best-selling author, world-renowned keynote speaker, Michael Hingson, and make sure you come back in a couple minutes because he is going to talk about how to get over self-sabotage.
People ask all the time, who the heck is low-cost airlines? Well, we're not just one airline. When you're talking to us, you're talking to everyone. We are the discount supermarket for all airline tickets. Plus, we have all the airlines and always have the best prices. American, Delta, United, plus all the specialized international airlines and a lot more. And we make it easy. We guarantee you'll talk to a live human in 60 seconds. You can have the rates you need and have your trip booked in 5 minutes. Now, how cool is that? And remember, when you're talking to us, it's like talking to every single airline available with one fast phone call. All you need to do is call and find the best prices to fly wherever it is you want to go. So are you ready? Call Low Cost Airlines right now. 800-451-8603. 800-451-8603. 800-451-8603. That's 800-451-8603.
Hey there, fellow travelers. It's me, the Hotel Wiz. Before you go anywhere, call me day or night for hotel rates too low to publish. I'll save you up to 75% on over 500,000 hotels across the globe. You see, I've already done the research, so you don't have to spend time online trying to find the best deal. That's up to 75% off. Just call me, the Hotel Wiz. It's a free call, and you get instant access to rates too low to publish with no cancellation fees.
Make a free call now and save up to 75% off your hotel rooms the next time you're going somewhere for business or pleasure. Call the Hotel Wiz now and get instant access to rates too low to publish. 800-590-1163. 800-590-1163. 800-590-1163. Call the Hotel Wiz right now for rates too low to publish. 800-590-1163.
Okay, can I be real for a second? You're out there crushing it in some areas of your life, but in others, it's like a hot mess express. Sound familiar? Here's the thing. You're not just meant to survive, you're meant to thrive. And that's exactly what I help my clients do in my coaching program. Together, we'll tackle all seven pillars of abundance, because who wants killer abs but a dumpster fire of a bank account? Or a thriving career but zero in the romance department? Yeah, no thanks. I'm inviting you to schedule a breakthrough call with me. No pressure, no awkward sales pitch, just you, me, and a chance to figure out why you're stuck and how to get unstuck. So stop doom scrolling and start doing something about it. Click the link in the show notes and let's start giving you your best, most bougie life. You in? Welcome back, everyone. It's Rebecca Whitman, your host, helping you go from burned out and overwhelmed to balanced, beautiful, and abundant. We are interviewing renowned international speaker and best-selling author Michael Hingson, who escaped the World Trade Center with the help of his dog, Roselle. So tell us, what are your thoughts on self-sabotage and how can we overcome it?
Well, we think a lot less of ourselves than we should, and I don't mean that in an egotistical way. I am the host of a podcast called Unstoppable Mindset, where inclusion, diversity, and the unexpected meet. I started it for a company called Accessibe, and we are now in getting close to the end of our fourth year. We started in August of 2021, so we're well into our fourth year, and tomorrow we will publish episode 310 since we started it. And wow. What I realized along the way is that we started the podcast to help people realize that they're more unstoppable than they think they are. We really sell ourselves way too short, and that's a problem. We tend to just do stuff. We don't analyze what we do, and this also gets back to the whole idea of learning to control fear. If we would take time at the end of every day to think about what happened today. How did it go? What didn't go well? I will never say we have a failure. Failure isn't acceptable. We may have things that happen along the way, but failure isn't the issue, because that means it's an end all. You screwed up and that's it. That's not the way it is. The fact of the matter is that we may very well screw up in one thing or another. But if we take the time at the end of the day to step back, maybe while we're falling asleep, think about what happened. What didn't work today? Why didn't it work? What was I afraid of that made it not work? Or what worked pretty well? But what could I have done to even make that better? If we would start to learn to do a lot more introspection of what we do in our own lives, one, we would help to really focus and learn to overcome or utilize in a much better way the fears that we typically have. But two, we will also establish a mindset that helps us better analyze what we do and not go so far into just sabotaging our own efforts, which we oftentimes do. Have you ever played Trivial Pursuit?
Yes, I have. I used to love that game.
So when you play Trivial Pursuit and somebody asks a question, how often did you think of an answer and then immediately you went, oh, no, that can't be the right answer. That was too easy. And so you don't answer with that answer. You answer with something else. But it turns out that the original thing that you thought about was the right answer.
Often.
Yeah.
Which means our first instinct, to trust your intuition, right? Trust your first instinct.
Exactly right. And the bottom line is that we need to really listen to our inner voice. We really need to learn how to trust our minds that know things that we may have consciously forgotten, but they're still there. And the fact of the matter is that if we would learn to listen to ourselves, we would be much better off, and we would be a lot more productive, and we would be able to function a whole lot better than otherwise we might. And I think that people who are successful, who truly are successful, understand that, and they learn to listen to that voice. And the result of that is that they tend to not sabotage efforts. But the other part about that is there are also rules to go by. And it's important that you aren't a jerk. You don't do things just to trounce on everyone else. But again, you have to learn how to do that. But you can, and I think we all instinctively have those abilities inside of us if we will choose to learn them and use them to make ourselves better people.
Do you think because you don't have sight that you've been forced to deepen your intuition and that you have a clearer channel to the divine where you're getting like intuitive hits and communicating with the divine, who I like to call God? Do you think that intuitive muscle has been deepened for you and heightened?
I don't think blindness has anything directly to do with it. I know a lot of people who don't listen very well at all. And both blind and sighted people. I also know sighted people who do listen very well.
Yes.
I think we all have the ability. Blindness doesn't have anything to do with it. People want to attribute different kinds of gifts and so on to blind people. But the reality is, blindness isn't the issue. It is really how we behave, what we choose to do with our lives, what we choose to learn, whether it's being blind or not being blind. The abilities and the opportunities are there, but we have to understand that and learn about them and then move forward.
That is well said. So how do we change our mindset? There's so many people who they think maybe they feel sorry for themselves, or maybe they're in a mode of I'll never be successful, or I'll never get that promotion, or they just feel so stuck in their life. How do you suggest people change from a fixed mindset to a growth mindset?
Well, if they feel that way, then that's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
We have to start taking time at the end of every day to be a little bit more introspective and to say, this happened today. I didn't like that, but when I think about it, here's what I could have done if I had thought about it. And I'm going to make sure that I think about that in the future so that the next time this comes up, it won't happen again. We have to take the initiative of developing our mind muscle. We have to be the ones to learn that we are our best teachers. We're not our own worst critics. It's a negative concept that isn't a positive thing. We are our own best teachers because, in fact, no one can teach us anything. They can present us with things, but we have to decide to teach ourselves and learn from it. But if we don't adopt a learning and growth attitude up front, then we're never going to get anywhere. And the bottom line is, it is a process. It doesn't happen all at once, but we have to work at it individually ourselves to make it happen. And if we do, we will find over time that we will learn to listen to God. We will learn to listen to that inner voice. We will be able to grow and make more positive, constructive decisions. And the things that we used to think are failures, but are just challenges that maybe we could have addressed differently, will get addressed differently, and we'll be able to move forward.
I like writing. That's a tool that's really helped me to process what's happened to me. I have an abundance journal that I use, and if anybody's listening, you want to grab it, it's in the link in the show notes, but it's basically flipping the negative to the positive by saying how the worst thing that happened today is actually the best thing, and there's other ways where I'm kind of like noting what I progressed on, what I'm working toward, looking at other people and noticing what's working for them. And I think for me, this abundance journal has been one of the biggest tools to learn from my own experience and reframe as you're explaining.
We have to vision, and we have to be the ones for ourselves to take the initiative to vision and view what we want our life to be. And if we view that in a positive way and we consistently do it, when things happen that we don't expect, that would typically be negative sorts of things, when we're thinking about it in a positive way, then we're much more empowered to be able to say, why'd this happen? What can I do to make sure that doesn't happen in the future? But we have to take the initiative to do that. When we do, it works. It takes a while, but it works.
Because we're learning from our own experience, and we're not just being a victim and letting life happen to us. We're saying, okay, what is my part? What did I do to create that situation? And how can I be better the next time?
Right. That's the point. And that is a question, and those are questions that we should be asking ourselves all the time. It isn't negative. It isn't wrong to ask. The question is, though, not just asking the question. The question is then looking inside to get the answer.
Yes.
And the more of that we do, the more answers we'll get.
Now, I know you mentioned that you were a sales manager when the 9/11 tragedy happened. A lot of people on this show are entrepreneurs and salespeople. So do you have any advice for your sales process or what you learned about sales when you were the sales manager?
Be ethical in everything that you do. I had situations where we went on sales calls. My team wanted me to go with them. And I figured along the way, and I ask a lot of questions when I'm in a sales mode. I don't ask yes or no questions. I want to know things like, tell me what it is that you're looking for in a product that you brought us out here for. Tell me about your project. And getting information like that and learning to listen to what people say will tell you whether you have the right product or not. And if you don't have the right product, don't force something on people. As I said, be ethical. I've had situations where I told a customer, our product won't work well for you, but here's why it won't. The reality is that when I do that and did that, invariably, I got calls later saying, we really appreciate what you told us. And the result of all of that is, we have another project that clearly works best with your product. We're not even going to put it out to bid. Tell us a price and we'll buy it today. And again, it's developing a trust. The best salespeople are teachers. They're guides. They help people. And again, if they don't have the right product, be honest about it. If they do have the right product, help people understand why it's the right product. Don't just say it is.
I love that. I think that asking questions and telling stories are the top two skills of any great communicator or salesperson. Do you have any parting words of wisdom, Michael, from everything that you have learned along your way of escaping 9/11, speaking on stages in front of, you know, dignitaries and all the different corporations you've spoken in front of? Like, leave us with some parting words of wisdom.
We are our own best teachers, and we can learn anytime we choose to do so. I have been blessed to have, as you pointed out, a number of times I've been asked to deliver keynote addresses. My very first talk after September 11th, when the media got my story, was about a six-minute talk at an ecumenical church service in New Jersey, celebrating the lives of all the people who in New Jersey were lost on September 11th. And when a pastor called me and asked if I would agree to come, I said, sure. And then afterward, I said, how many people are going to be there? And he said, oh, about 6,000. You know, the reality is that audiences want speakers to succeed. And so I was very blessed to be able to go to that and so many events ever since and speak. And I know that people want to hear the story. And my job is to understand the audience and bring it to them in a way, whatever it is I'm bringing, that will cause them to react in a positive way and gain their trust as we're going forward.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Thank you, Michael. I know my listeners are going to want to stay in touch with you. How can people stay in touch with you? Where can they find you online?
So they can find me at www.michaelhingson, michaelhingson.com. There's a way they can contact me through there. They can email me at speaker@michaelhingson, michaelhingson.com. If they buy my books, there's contact information in there as well. Love people to come and listen to Unstoppable Mindset. It is available wherever podcasts are available. So I hope people will do that. And we're going to have you on, as you know, in sometime in the future. So we're looking forward to that.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to it. It'll be fun. But I'd love to interact with anyone. And if you want to be a guest on our podcast, there's only one rule, and that is you got to have fun. If you can't have fun, we don't want you. And who doesn't want to have fun? But in fact, I believe everyone has stories to tell about being unstoppable. And I want people to come on and tell their stories and show the rest of us why we all can be more unstoppable than we thought. And as I said, you can find it anywhere podcasts are available. It's Unstoppable Mindset, where inclusion, diversity, and the unexpected meet is the full title. And it's mostly about unstoppability, although sometimes we do talk about inclusion and diversity, but mostly inclusion because diversity leaves out disabilities. So we tend to talk about inclusion because you can't be inclusive if you're going to leave out disabilities.
Amazing. Thank you again, Michael, for your story. I'm so grateful that I manifested you. I was talking about you for years, and now you've been on the show. And everybody, if you're listening, manifestation works. It's all about alignment, getting your life aligned, and seven key pillars of abundance. My name is Rebecca Whitman. I'm helping you go from burned out to overwhelmed. If you can help out the show, share this interview with someone. Someone else will be so inspired by Michael's story. And if you're listening on the radio or a podcast or on a TV platform, thank you so much for being a fan and a devoted listener. You're in my community, and my mission is to help you go from burned out to balanced, beautiful, and abundant. And until we meet again, keep your vibe high and magnetized. Bye, everyone. Level up, don't look back, let's go. Set the pace, watch me steal the show. Higher ground, yeah, I'm rising fast. This is my... Hey there, it's Rebecca, your magnetic abundance mentor. Let me ask you something. Are you feeling stuck, burned out, or like life just isn't as juicy as you know it can be? If you're nodding right along, it's time for a breakthrough. My coaching program is designed to help you align your life in all seven pillars of abundance: spiritual, physical, emotional, romantic, mental, social, and financial, so you can finally live that big, bold, sexy, and adventurous life you deserve. And here's the best part. I'm inviting you to schedule a breakthrough call with me. No pressure, no sales gimmicks, just a genuine chance to experience my coaching firsthand and get crystal clear on what is next for you. Because your best life is not a someday thing, it's a right now thing. So click the link in the show notes to book your breakthrough call, and let's start making magic together. Your next level is calling you. Thank you so much, Melissa, for leaving us the review of the week. She gives us 5 stars and says, amazing results every time. I've listened to a lot of podcasts over the years, but Rebecca has a way of pulling more from her guests than I think they even realize about themselves. Her candid conversation always sparkles, and I've had to pull over and listen because I was so hung up on the topic. Absolute must-have topics for any woman, both personally and professionally. Well, thank you so much for your positive review, Melissa, and everybody else who's listening out there. Please leave us a 5-star review, and we will share your testimony on the show. And if your testimony gets shared, you will get a special gift from me. So make sure to leave that review and keep listening to the show.